Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
What's the enduring message of the novel and movie Gone with the Wind? Let's go in-depth with historian Kathy Wilson. Kathy, what's special about the novel Gone with the Wind?
It builds on our sense of nostalgia, and it does it with topics and themes that are just as relevant today as they were in 1936 when the book was published.
And what are some of those themes?
Oh boy, probably the most popular would be unrequited love. We've all had that first crush or that first love that wasn't reciprocated, just like Scarlett has. And things such as want, a sense of want. The Civil War takes such a toll on the South, and it leaves people hungry and homeless. They've dealt with unimaginable loss, whether it's in the loss of life with family members or loss of property. There's a sense of wonder about and uncertainty about what the future holds, whether or not it's possible to rebound from those sorts of events. And because of the way the book is structured, at the end, you know that it's going to be better. I mean, Scarlett's favorite comeback line is always, I don't have to worry about that today, right? Tomorrow is another day. Tomorrow is going to be a better day. So it's a story of loss, of want, of hopelessness and hopefulness that defies time.
And remind me, what year was it written?
1936.
Okay, and so the movie came out really quickly.
1939.
Yeah, that was fast.
It was, and I think that one of the questions that was posed to me today was, why hasn't it been replicated? Because most popular movies, someone tries to do a remake. And I think because of when it was published and when the movie came out, it was positioned in some respects to be a first of its kind. I mean, this is the era of the new Technicolor, where everything is grand and intensely bright and it's in your face. And they did it in such an epic scale. I mean, I think about things like, you know, the Ten Commandments and, all of a sudden now the other movies that come
Ben-Hur.
Out.
Ben-Hur,
yes, exactly. Yeah. That come out at the same time, where they're filmed on a grand scale, and they feature the actors and actresses of the day that everybody wanted to meet or to be. And I think the combination of the timing and the story made it an instant hit. It was an overnight sensation as a book, and it was an overnight sensation as a film. And according to the statistics that I read a few years ago, that when adjusted for inflation, the film Gone with the Wind remains the all-time largest grossing movie ever.
So, and it won an Academy Award.
Right.
And if I remember it, there were a lot of other good movies that year that didn't win. And so it was really a masterpiece.
It was, in every sense of the world. You know, there was a lot of conflict over who was going to play Scarlett O'Hara. And there were a wide range of actresses who wanted that part. I mean, everybody from Betty Davis to Elizabeth Taylor wanted that role. And the biggest complaint that was voiced about Vivian Leigh getting the part was the fact that she was English. Mm-hmm. And they did not think that an English woman should be playing an American Southerner. But then I would also say that there wasn't nearly as much resistance to Leslie Howard being Ashley Wilkes. He was English too. But there's something about that image of the genteel Southern planter that I think maybe lends itself more to that sort of presence that he brought to his character. But they were most upset with Vivian Leigh as Scarlett. People were really upset.
Well, she won Best Actress.
I know, so. Go figure.
But we can be like that.
That's right.
Yeah, we can be like that.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about Gone with the Wind with historian Kathy Wilson. Some of the issues that the novel addresses in 1936, mm-hmm. and the movie in 1939. I mean, it's a whole different world now. I don't know if it would play very well now.
Well, in the current state of affairs, the things that we're dealing with today, I don't even think it's a question of it playing well. I think there would be so many protests about different aspects mm-hmm. of the film that it would never have made it out of the screening room. From that standpoint, it definitely was a case of timing. But again, it's not the modern interpretations that are the problems, you know, how Northerners or Southerners are portrayed, how whites or blacks are portrayed. Those are problematic in their own different ways. But it really depends on how they chose to focus on those themes that we talked about earlier. A good example of this would be looking at Shakespeare, for example. There are a number of different plays that Shakespeare has done that in their own right could be considered very much of a time unto itself. But yet, that being said, I've seen four different productions of Hamlet, the first being in its original settings of Shakespeare's time, but the most recent one where it was done almost as a dystopian novel would be translated, where instead of a king, you have a corporate boss, and the soldiers are actually more like bodyguards and thugs, and they carry Uzis and wear trench coats. And yet the story still worked. So if you took the story from Gone with the Wind and you could find a way to translate that into a modern retelling, it could work. Because a lot of those same issues still exist. Things like when you pit the past against the future, one is nostalgic for the way it was, the other is a fear and uncertainty of what is to come. And in Gone with the Wind, it's really based on three things. It's gender roles, how gender roles are defined, what the proper relationship is between men and women, how the social hierarchy is defined. In Gone with the Wind, it's white supremacy over all people of color. And the third part is race relations. And those three themes are every bit as applicable today as they were when she wrote the story in the 30s.
Right, but it takes a particular point of view of privilege, even though they're having, from the people of privilege, mm-hmm. even though they're having a very difficult time, as opposed to another point of view of the people without privilege.
That's true, which is why an author whose name escapes me right now came out with an alternative version a number of years ago. Oh my gosh, it's probably been 25 years ago, that sought to take that opposite perspective, and it was called The Wind Done Gone and it was Gone with the Wind through the eyes of the enslaved. And it was met with mixed reviews. As you can imagine.
Yeah. And now I wonder why Spike Lee or somebody didn't turn it into a movie. That would have been really interesting.
That would be fascinating.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about Gone with the Wind with historian Kathy Wilson. Well, what's interesting to me is the movie was out of circulation for a long time. You couldn't see it on TV.
Right.
And I remember it had a theatrical release when I was in college, I think. And so Gone with the Wind, the movie, was sort of this mysterious thing, this greatest movie of all time. And mm-hmm. but nobody could see it for 30 years or something, if I'm remembering right. And mm-hmm. then they had the big theatrical release again.
Mm-hmm.
And me watching it all those years ago in college versus me watching it or reading the book today, so much has transpired since what was seen as, a perspective on the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things have really, really changed in, a generation or two.
And that's to be expected. And that's why I did this program and why I have several others that are author-based programs. The goal of this program is to help the reader understand how the historical context relates to the author's creative work. In other words, how the events of the 19th century, specifically things like the Civil War and Reconstruction, affected Margaret Mitchell's parents, because those events that they experienced informed how they raised their children, much in the same way that for us, going through Korea or Vietnam or the assassination of the Kennedys or Martin Luther King, or even something more recently as 9/11, all of those things have left their mark on us individually and collectively and affect the things that we do going forward. And I always encourage my audiences to go back and reread whichever book it is we're talking about at that given time, because if they read it first when they were children, 12, 14 years old, or like you saw the movie when they were in college, if they read it again now or see a film again as an adult, because of the experiences that they bring with them to that next viewing or reading point, it will change what you take away from the work itself. And in this particular case with Gone with the Wind, one of the important things that I focus on in my discussion is the concept of the myth of the lost cause. Because whether we like to admit it or not, Americans both North and South were racist. And both North and South struggled to find a way to come to terms with what happened with the war. And the simplest way to do that was to create a new narrative that was acceptable to both sides. And that's what the myth of the lost cause was, that the South fought gallantly to defend their home and hearth against these aggressive Northerners who sought to undermine the legacy of the founding fathers. And that they could live with. If they didn't come up with something that justified their actions, a Confederate general summed it up really well. He said, if we can't justify our actions, we go down in history as a brave but rash people who sought in an illegal manner to overthrow our government. That's my paraphrase. Mm-hmm. So it's either find a new way to explain what happened or accept the fact that you were traitors, that what you had done was to commit treason. And that in itself, the Lost Cause, has become so embedded in our culture that it doesn't matter what part of the country you're from, people still embrace that as the view of what the Civil War was really all about.
We still aren't over the Civil War.
We aren't. And it's because of this Lost Cause. The process was three parts, and it began at the end of the war in 1865, and it ran up into the 1920s, and it was responsible for the Jim Crow laws in the South. It was responsible for the disenfranchisement of blacks. It was responsible for the resistance to the civil rights movement, which in itself was a response to all those things that came before. And because we can't get away from that concept that covers that whole period, we're stuck in a never-ending loop, it seems like, of social, racial, and economic unrest. It's really, in some respects, kind of dire. But the one thing that the book does, and the movie does too, is remind us that there's hope.
Thanks to Kathy Wilson for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.